listeners, you're listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. Every week, we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We are your hosts, Sarah Cho.
And Sam Collier. And in today's episode, we are discussing the topic of social media and our personal experiences with social media through the lens as writers. So this was actually a suggestion from our guest, Terry Guest, who we interviewed a couple weeks ago, and we thought it would be a great topic to explore in more depth. We're interested in talking about when social media is helpful and when it's harmful to us as writers. So let's just jump in, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just start with like a brief overview or get a read on how you feel about social media yourself.
So it all started in 1995 when I got my first AOL account.
How old were you?
No, six? actually I had Yahoo first. It was an email account. My email address was like snakecho89 at yahoo.com.
And you were 6 years old in 1995.
Yes, but five or 6 years old when I got my first email account.
Yeah, I remember AIM.
AIM, and I had AIM in middle school, or fifth grade, sixth grade. Because, it was so funny. People were like, what's your AIM? Like, what the hell is that? Well, let me message you so we could, figure out school stuff. That's how it without you using the phone so your parents could hear on you. It would need something more privately, but which becomes all this cutesy. Do you like so-and-so? Here's his IM, username. AIM.
I guess at that time there were chat rooms. I remember chat rooms when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
But there was nothing.
ASL, like age, sex, location, I don't know, you ASL.
It really felt like, and I mean, of course, there's one computer, in my house, it was downstairs, yeah. So it felt like, even though, other people would want to turn on the computer or whatever, so you couldn't be on there very long, but it really felt like you were going to a place to get online, and it took forever, and it did feel kind of like you never knew what you were going to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hogged the computer. I was I hogged it for my siblings. I was like, they're like, hey, can I? Nope. I'm on it. And I was just on it almost 24/7. I wouldn't go to bed till 3 a.m. just online.
Really? Wow.
I would just stay online, whether it be messaging my friends, or there was so much stuff that was happening. There was MySpace, blogging,
LiveJournal.
Yeah. There was one before LiveJournal or right after that.
It was another kind of diary.
Yeah, it was another blog. But I was on that, and there was this, same way I feel today, where I was posting, I was, sharing photos, because it's I want to be noticed. I want to be seen. I don't know who. Maybe it's the boy I like. I don't know. But will they notice me?
this is kind of hard to remember, but there wasn't really a Google yet, right? I mean, it was
were
search engines. But if you wanted to go to a website, you had to know the address of the website.
Exactly. I think Google, I'm trying to remember Google came out same time, but it didn't take prominence.
Right. Well, it just wasn't that
Gmail
yet.
Account.
Right.
They had their own, when they started offering these services, create a Gmail. And then I remember it's always the young people were you have Yahoo? That's lame. I have Gmail. And then it's I gotta jump on that. I gotta join the Gmail club instead of leave Yahoo.
I'm pretty sure I did not have a Gmail account until college. I had an AOL. So I guess I was an old person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So from those early days until now, how do you think social media has changed in terms of the way you think about it as a writer? Like, how has it changed for you, or how has it shaped your writing?
Yeah. I would say initially, like, I have the same Twitter account since 2009, or like,
I joined. Wow.
And I think I was still in college, and I when I first joined, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just kind of like, oh, everyone joined this Twitter thing. And so I just created the account. Believe it or not, all my social medias today, I was a first Sarah Cho, and idiot that I am, changed my username. And then I lost the Sarah Cho. But believe it or not, I had the first website, sarahcho.com. Like, oh,
that's really cool.
So I was like,
you're so ahead of your time.
I just didn't look, there's not a lot of Asians who were like doing creative stuff or something at the time. Or not at the time, but we're jumping on this whole social media as quickly as I was. Mm. But yeah, believe it or not, I was like all the first Sarah Cho's. But I joined and, you know, I was kind of doing the same thing. I was like tweeting my thoughts of the day without any care in the world. You know, I think this is like even before retweeting. I don't remember retweeting started that early. It was just like tweeting and liking.
Well, and the only people reading it probably was people you knew, right?
Yes. It was just friends I knew. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just college friends. And then fast forward to 2021, and my Twitter account has become this place where, like, I mean, like, there's a lot of writers on Twitter. There's a lot of writers and comedians and journalists. But, like, I feel like it is very – has – I don't know what happened, but it became more, like, writer-centric because people are kind of able to tweet funny things. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely went from, like, oh, my friends – just for my friends to now it's, like, where I connect with writers. And writers connect with me, and I, you know, I even today, I like, it's a place where I'd like, I want to just see how comic ideas will work, you know, like just like hear some like little jokes and like a little kind of little short sketches, kind of an idea, you know, of, and like, will people respond and how will they respond? And, and it's kind of functioned that way. But then I find myself, and I shared this last time, where I watch something, I'm like, oh, this was really bad. I don't like it. And I want to like tweet about it, but I stop because I find myself, I don't know who's going to read this. Maybe it's a person who made that thing.
Right.
Or connects with people who I don't know who's who they follow, who they know. And, you know, writing, trying to, you know, be a writer is a business. So like, I don't want to shoot myself in the foot and like, you know, burn bridges unknowingly. Mm-hmm. So I find myself stopping and like, oh, maybe I won't tweet that. So I have just these drafts of tweets that I have, but I just never posted.
You know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking about how it seems like, and I'm not on Twitter, but I think there are a lot of corollaries with like Facebook or Instagram. But it seems like social media has really morphed from this thing that we would use to talk to our friends in college to you just never know who you're talking to now. And I think a lot of people make the argument that like, if you're going to get up on your soapbox and tweet out an opinion, like you have to be ready for people to throw tomatoes at you if they don't like your opinion or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it used to be this thing where you were just talking to your friends. So I think to a lot of people, it feels like, oh, well, I'm just having a conversation. I'm talking to like these two people that I'm really thinking about when I tweet this.
Right.
You know, and then from like, so the real world analogy would be I'm standing in the street talking to my two friends and I share my opinion about this thing I didn't like. And then from five blocks away, somebody hears me and comes over and starts throwing a tomato at me. You know, it's like, and so you're kind of trying to do these two things at once where you're like speaking to a huge crowd on your soapbox, but also sometimes you just want to talk to your two friends.
Right.
And like, there's no, you never know which one it's going to be. Mm-hmm. You never, and I think for a lot of people, that's really exciting because they're like, oh, maybe I'll go viral if I tweet this funny thing. But there's also always that threat of like, you never know who's going to read this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and there's this question of, before my accounts were private. Well, definitely my Instagram is private. My Twitter is public. I'm on Facebook, but like I go back and forth deactivating and not because sometimes my work still requires me to go on Facebook. So it's like I'm not on it. I don't have the app, mm-hmm. but it's like still there. But this question of like, okay, I'm going to keep my account private. Like, okay, I'm going to keep my account private. But then there are times when I've been told, because like if I've submitted some kind of a packet or something and then like you can't keep your account private because like, you know, so-and-so is like going to look you up and want to know who you are as a person. So you can't keep it always like private because they like check up on, they kind of, it's like.
No, I totally disagree with that. People should not have the right to look at your whole social media.
I know. I totally disagree. I mean, I totally agree what you're saying. But it's like the culture is like, the idea is like, if you want to do this thing, like having accessibility, that's why I keep my Twitter open. Wow. Because like, that's where, I mean, cause I'm a writer. So I want, that's a place where I could publish my like funny thing, my funny ideas. If you want to see what I'm like, my voice, you know, where mm-hmm. Instagram is private. So I do like, that's why I keep that open for that reason. Like I'm very, that's why I'm like very picky and choosy. But yeah, it's like, there's this like people have missed job opportunities because wow. they were too private with their life. And because we're like the showrunner or whoever or something, we're like, if they're like, if I don't like, I want to get a sense of who they are as a people because I want to be able to work with them and like hang out with them and into work, you know, like in the writer's room. But if I can't even know what that means or what that's like, then I'm like, they just move on. Like
I hate that. Like that's so stressful.
It's so stressful. And so I hear stories like that and I've had people tell me that and I'm like, okay, well, like that's why I just pick and choose. Like, well, Instagram is like literally for my friends only. Like, or like someone I've met or I have some acquaintance, like, or they're like a mutual friend, like there's some connection, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Twitter is literally more than half of them is like complete strangers. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
The thing is, I was just thinking about this the other day too. Like, even if your profile is private, there's nothing to stop somebody from like screenshotting whatever you post and then posting that publicly. Like that, that is a thing I, you know, 5 years ago would never cross my mind, but I feel like it's very common now.
Yeah.
And so to some extent, it seems like nothing is really private on the internet.
Especially because as writers, like we have a website, we put photos up, we like have our bios. Like we, cause we're kind of being told like, we have to sort of, you know, it's like putting a resume out there, right? Mm-hmm. So here's a story, listeners. I have a website. I have my headshot. I have my bio. And one day on Instagram, I get a DM from a total stranger, some college girl all the way from Massachusetts, right? She's like, hey, just want to let you know my ex-boyfriend that I broken up with like 8 months ago created a fake account using your photo and followed me using your photo. I like took your photo. I did like a Google reverse search and he's using a totally different name with your photo. And I'm like, she sent me the account. I look at the account, I'm like, what the F is this? Like, these are my photos. Like he used my one of my headshots as his profile picture, you know, to follow his ex. It's just so weird. And then I'm like shouting out on Instagram, like telling my friends to report this account. Like, this is effed up. I even messaged that account, like, please don't use my photo. Like, don't effing do this, you know? So who knows? Like, I had the luck of like someone actually reaching out to me to find out who I am and like telling me.
And I also wonder how she found you. Maybe she did a reverse
image. Yeah, the Google search. Yeah, she took the profile picture and then uploaded it on the Google search engine. And then, so it's like, that hasn't happened to me again, but like that was the first time something like that happened to me where I was like, my photo,
so disturbing,
was used for some weird personal purpose of like stalking his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, and like that's your face, that's your image, like that's your property and identity.
You're right. So there's this like level of like, right, public versus private. It's like, mm-hmm. we are putting ourselves out there for the public, for work, for whatever reason, and then you don't know and who, like the person who's going to get into someone's hands, you know, like you just don't know.
And it is so, you're right that I think it's so common among artists and writers that we have an online presence. And I'm always kind of bemused when I, like if I Google somebody who isn't a writer or artist, just like a random person that I want to learn more about. And like, there's nothing about them on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, does this person not have any presence online? Like, that just seems so freeing, but also kind of strange. Like, where are you? And I forget sometimes that, you know, for people who aren't writers or artists or like doing some kind of public facing job like that, like there are a lot of people that just don't really have an internet presence, mm-hmm. which seems so nice.
Believe it or not, Kristen Wiig, Tina Fey, they don't have social media. They don't have social media. They say that they're, but I feel like they came at a point in their life where they didn't rely on social media to network, to put things up, you know, have a show, to be noticed. And then they became stars before social media started blowing up. And so they had no reason to be on social media, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like, I like think about that all the time. I'm like, oh, you guys are so lucky. Came up exactly the point where before the social media started blowing up and like people had to be on it. And so it's a constant mental debate in my mind all the time of like, how much am I gonna put out there? How much I'm not wanting putting out there? And when is it a really effective tool? And when is it just like a total waste of time?
Yeah. Well, I remember when I got off Facebook, I deactivated my Facebook account and talking to other writers. And so many people were like, I could never do that. I need it for my career. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, like, I didn't really know how to interpret that. I think it is true people get opportunities because they have that Facebook presence. But I also think it's true that, like, to a large extent, we delude ourselves into thinking we need something because it's addictive. And and I also find it very disturbing that this company has made us believe in such a short amount of time that we need it in our lives, that like we can't have a career or a social life without it. That's too much power to give to a company.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm sitting here thinking like, well, I'm still on Instagram and like spend way too much time just scrolling mindlessly through Instagram.
Nick always has this theory, like he left Facebook. Even like before, just like way before like anyone else, I feel like. But he like left because he right when he started noticing people started using Facebook as a soapbox, like kind of a place to like have these opinions and are like, but, and maybe it was like back in, maybe it was like during 2012 or 13 election or something, but like he left and then, no way, I'm mixing up time, but regardless, as soon as he started noticing as being a very soapboxy, he left. But and he always complains like, and I've noticed, and I sometimes complain about this too, where it's like those same people then moved over to Instagram.
Yeah, I know. Because Instagram used to just be images. It was so quiet. Now it's like so many opinions.
Yeah, moved over.
It's like all the images have been replaced by big essays.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, so I have also mixed feelings about that. Sometimes I'm like, I find it very helpful for finding out about new ideas or, but I don't know. I feel like I'm going to get off this recording and just like delete my Instagram.
Oh man.
Too much. I just feel like there's so much noise in my mind all the time from social media.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what are some of the good things about social media for writers?
To help you stay on.
What is it helpful for? Well, not me, but maybe some of our listeners want to feel better about their addictions. We'll do it for them.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so like I mentioned, I do love Twitter in that if I'm purposely wanting to post some like an idea, a joke, and see how this responds. Like, so I tweeted out like two things yesterday and like one tweet got like 60 likes and like three retweets.
Wow.
And another one was like only three likes. And I was like, okay, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it's don't treat it as like validation thing. Treat it like as a tool of like, why did that work? And why did then that didn't work? Like being like strategic about like, okay, that joke kind of worked because it was obviously people understood, like maybe this was a little of a wider, broader joke where people kind of understood what this was, where I was coming from. Here's like, okay, I tweeted this like photo. It's like, you know, there's like a joke that's going around like white boy summer. Mm-hmm. And I posted a soup I made called, and I called this like Asian hot soup summer. And one person liked it and just one Asian guy liked it. So, and I was like, all right, I know who the audience for that one was this who got the joke.
Do you ever wonder, like, there are so many factors outside your control. Like, the algorithm that shows your joke to more people could be skewed by the popularity of the first person to like it or,
totally,
you know,
yeah,
who just happens to be scrolling at that time of day. And there's so many random factors that are outside your control.
Outside of control, yeah. I mean, here the thing about these algorithms, I feel like is, it's like, yeah, if you, it sucks because the idea is that they want you to stay on, right? Mm-hmm. So every time you leave, you're like, you know what? I'm not going to post anything for today or tomorrow or whatever. Then I'm like, then you lose that algorithm or whatever that was drawing attention to your account, or you sort of lose the momentum it was building or whatever, which is annoying. Which again, the whole purpose of social media is that they want you to stay on. They want you to keep viewing things.
But isn't it also true that in order to, you know, so they're basically controlling the dopamine bursts in your brain. And so in order to keep you on, they have to provide this variable reward. So, don't you think they intentionally drive up likes for one post and then intentionally drive down likes for your next post so that it's unpredictable and that compels you to post more frequently?
I guess. I mean,
and then you're sitting there thinking, why is my second joke not as funny? When in reality, like, you actually are not receiving objective data because they might have just showed that tweet to fewer people.
I don't know if it's that. I think it's because when people like it or share it or retweet it, you know, that amps up the algorithm.
Yes, but also I think they are constantly playing with the gears and deciding how much they want to show each tweet to people.
You really think so?
Yes.
Because I've also, but then it's not just like, but I've had posts in a day, like multiple posts get a lot of seen because of my first post, like whatever that first post a day, if it was seen a lot, then yeah, it was like.
I think there are multiple factors at play, but I do think one of the factors is just like the slot machine where it's like unpredictable reward. And in order to make that unpredictable, they cannot make every one of your posts
seen by the same number of people. Yeah. I know. And another factor though into that is like time of day. I don't know why, yeah, but like, time of day also plays into that. Like, so there's all this like game that the algorithm and then the social media is playing, but I still like use it because even if like, yeah, three likes or whatever, like who liked it? It was all women liked it. You know, it was like, it still gives me a sense of like that way of like, okay, mm-hmm. so that kind of this is how this joke is going to play or this idea is going to play this way, mm-hmm. which like I'm not looking for number of likes. I'm looking for whatever reaction, like whatever that means. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. so it's like, so that's kind of like, if you're not looking for as a numbers game or you're not looking at it that way, you're just using it as for your own experiment, your own like
gathering information about how people
respond. Yeah. Kind of like just kind of seeing and then like, because I have tweeted something and it got an interesting reaction, then it became, I used that for a storytelling show. Like I went and wrote a whole thing about it.
Oh, that's so cool.
So that's kind of like, that's how I kind of use it. It's like,
what was the story?
Oh, it was just about fun. It's all about social media on this topic. But it wasn't about, like, my dad finding me on LinkedIn and trying to add me.
Yeah.
It was like that has become like the story I have often tell at open mics and storytelling shows. And it always gets like such a funny, interesting reaction from people. They're like shocked by it. There's only like element of shocker. But it was like a tweet that I tweeted out like 2 years ago. That I didn't think it was at the time when I tweeted, it was just like out of emotional, like I'm so annoyed by this. Mm-hmm. But it had it was my first tweet that I was like, people were like liking or like responded to positively in a way that was like, oh, there's something here that I could mine and work towards an act for an mm-hmm, act or something. Mm-hmm.
But that is one of the benefits, I think, that like you, there's this opportunity to share your thought with people you don't know and mm-hmm. and get feedback on this idea that you wouldn't be able to get nearly as easily or immediately in the real world.
Yeah, like when you write a play and then you're like, okay, now I have to gather the actors, the directors, and all this stuff, and then like mm-hmm. seeing how will they respond and what's their comments like and stuff like that. And sometimes, like, before I go there, like, do just any of these kernel of ideas, just kind of like, is there anything here that might people react to or like might like and that I could keep exploring, you know? Mm-hmm. So, in that sense, like, that's what I like about Twitter as a writer. Mm-hmm. And I do follow other writers. And so it's like, it's like an interesting place for writers. But yeah, and Instagram, it's like literally just personal, like, photos, me, sometimes photos like cool things that happen, food
you're eating.
I have a whole food. It's so funny. Like, so I have another account for my food because I just wanted a place where it was like uninterrupted images. I didn't want like, I have like a photo of my cat disrupting all my food. You know what I mean? So I was just like, I just want a place where all my food. And so I just created that place. And so, yeah, and it's like I only follow my friends only my friends follow me on that. But mm-hmm. and all the food places and the food things I want to eat, I follow. But
is that one private too, or is it public?
I think that one is. It was private for a long time, and then I just made it public because then, I wanted, like. Other foodies, like I like seeing what other foodies who they are to follow.
Yeah, because if you tag something on a public account, then other people could find you with that tag.
Yeah, like I found really good like fried chicken places, because they're like, because it was public, and then mm-hmm. they like tagged me, and then I'm like, ooh, I gotta try this really good fried chicken place.
Yeah, that's cool.
So it's public to get recommendations, if that makes sense. Like, and then the way I feel like that algorithm works there is like, they obviously recommend me places, and then I'm like, oh, like a new place opened up down the street where I live, like, so that's for that purpose. But yeah, my own Instagram personally is like just for friends or mm-hmm. within my own network of friends and acquaintances, if I know them.
Which platform do you think you spend the most time on? Like just scrolling through?
So here's the funny thing. I feel like most recently I downloaded this game on my app. It's like room decorating app. Because I've been watching so much HGTV. That has been – so I've just been playing this
that sounds fun.
Room decor game. So that's when I – so I feel like I haven't been scrolling on Instagram as much because this game has taken my place. And Twitter, I only tweet right before I go to bed. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I just have, like, ideas right before I go to bed. Like, I just have these ideas, and I just – and then I see what's, like – because people are, like, up late, you know? And so I just tweet it, and I just kind of turn it off and go to bed. Or sometimes I tweet early in the morning. But I feel like – because that's kind of, like, my weird creative times is, like, night and – late at night and early morning. Mm-hmm. That's the only time I'll, like, tweet. And during the day, I just don't think about it as much. So I'm not scrolling on Twitter unless I find something is happening in the news where like,
right.
And then it's like fast information. I'm like, oh, what is happening during this time?
That is a real advantage. I mean, I don't have a Twitter account, but when there's something happening in the news, like when Trump was in the hospital, I started I would just go to different journalists' mm-hmm. Twitter pages and see the updates in real time because I wanted to go right away.
Exactly. And that's I guess those are three ways. Yeah. Early morning, late at night, and then some big major news event is happening for crazy reason. Like, yeah, Trump getting COVID. I go to Twitter is like the first place I go because I also follow a bunch of journalists. Instagram is kind of like sporadic throughout the day. I know we like DM each other on Instagram because we like find things that are funny. They're like baby goats. And, and I feel like I'm on Instagram when like I'm not like I'm on between tasks at work and I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I hate work right now and I want a break.
Take a break. Yeah.
Take a break.
That's when I look at Instagram.
But it's not like throughout the day. Yeah. So cumulatively, I feel like I spend maybe average like – it's still a lot, but I feel like it's like 3 to 4 hours mm-hmm. in a day of total of social media, which is a huge improvement. When I was first dating Nick and he looked at my phone, like, you spent 12 hours on social media. Like, you know, like,
stop looking at my phone. Yeah.
Like, he just like noticed like the alert. And then like, I was like, you have a real problem, Sarah. Like, you have a real problem, an addiction. And then I was like, and it was true. Here's the thing. My level of addiction happens, you'll notice, is like how employed I am. You know what I mean? Like, the more employed I am, the busy I am, and I'm like, I'm hardly on it. But if I have so much time on my hand, then yeah, I'm going to be on social media.
Yeah, the times in my life when I spent a huge amount of time on Facebook were when I like didn't have enough to do. But then I remember thinking – like whatever void this platform is filling in my life, I could be doing so many other things with that mm-hmm. to fill that void. I find myself scrolling through Instagram stories and like reading posts, and then I'm like learning about something and then I want to know more about it. And I mean, this story is so familiar to everybody, but I'll get on to check Instagram for 2 minutes for a break. And then like an hour later, I'm watching some story from some account that I've never heard of before because I want to learn more about something obscure. Mm-hmm. And It's terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, because if you're a very curious person, mm-hmm. it could be a very crazy place to be.
Too curious. At the same time,
like, I feel like so many – well, okay, well, maybe this is bad or good. I don't know. But I do feel like I get inspired and I'm like, oh, this could be a funny story for something. Like, yes. Oh, this could be – you know, you get inspired. But at the same time, do you think that because we're all on it, we're all like have this hive mind of these ideas and then you start noticing about everybody is writing this.
Okay, this is so interesting because I'm really glad you brought this up because I've noticed that like when I step away from social media for a period of time or if I'm talking to somebody who's not on social media, there's like a common language or a common awareness of what's happening in the like in the discourse, right? The mm-hmm. Twitter discourse, Instagram discourse that like I'm not aware of or the other person who's not on social media is not aware of, where a phrase can like if it's divorced from the context, it's social media context, like the person might have no idea why that's such a loaded phrase. So like I'm gonna give like a really I don't know, I'm just gonna give an example that feels very fraught, but like I remember talking to somebody a couple years ago who was not on social media and used the phrase like not all men are dot 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 dot, and she like did not realize that like not all men was a thing that people said to like make fun of or critique a view within the Me Too movement, right? Or about the Me Too movement. Like she and I just remember thinking like if you're not on social media or you're not checking social media occasionally, you can miss out on these conversations and then you can really say something offensive and not realize why it's offensive.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, what do you do about that?
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel like what TikTok is doing. I was like, you know what? No matter what people say, I'm not going to go on TikTok mainly because of just like my theory is about like it's a Chinese company and like – or it was owned by China, Chinese company, tech company, and they're like
– I just feel like I'm too old for it.
But also – but then TikTok has been influencing so much what you see on Instagram now.
Yeah.
Like dances and speech, like weird things and stuff. Like people who upload on TikTok obviously are re-uploading it on Instagram. So you're like finding all these TikTok videos. And what's trending in TikTok. And then so I'm like, now I feel like – I'm like, wow, now I feel so old. Like,
yeah.
Like, I have no idea what this is. Like, couples dancing together in unison or like
– And it would take so long to get caught up to speed on the context for all of that.
Right. Right. And then so I always go back and forth like – should I just give in and join TikTok? Should I just do it? Because I hate feeling left out.
Don't do it.
Feeling like, ugh.
It's fine. Let the younger generation have TikTok.
I'm still young.
I said younger.
Let me be that. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, if I'm not wearing big, giant, white Adidas shoes and like
with like tights and like those days are coming, Sarah. It's coming for you.
Oh my god. It's so funny. Okay, so I honestly don't know if we answered the question like what the benefits of social media, because we're constantly wrapped right about what's
happening.
Yeah,
you're right.
I mean, I'm trying what I hear success stories of people do finding like I have been reached out to which never went anywhere, but like lit managers and stuff, you know, but like mm-hmm. it never went anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's such an interesting place when that happens. And like, you have to understand, like today versus writers trying to come up in the 90s or like early aughts, like the game has changed. Like yeah. before you're thinking like, oh, okay, to be a writer, screenwriter in LA, I need to like go to the bars and smooth with people and try to get into those parties and like, you know, like now it's literally nobody does that. Or like maybe
they just sit at home on their couch and like tweet.
Yeah. And like bloggers becoming TV writers and getting book yeah. deals. And like you, it's just like, it's insane that the bridge of like trying to make stuff and for the public is like closed off, like getting closed. It's like shorter and like it's kind of cool and crazy to see, but at the same time, it's like, it's, everyone is also doing it. It's like too accessible. Everyone, like, it's like now I feel like it's that noise is like hundreds of thousands of people of
yeah.
trying to do the same thing that I want to do. And then I get lost in that, all those different voices.
Well, and I'm going to say something that feels very strange to me because I'm such an introvert, but the Twitter approach is so much more introvert friendly than the crowded bar approach. But there's something about like being in a room full of other people in person yeah. where like you actually get to know who the other person is. And you just,
yeah.
I mean, the argument that you can't know who somebody is or get to know their style if you don't have access to their social media mm-hmm. page is so scary to me because you're actually not getting to know somebody by reading their social media page. You might yeah. think you are, but
yeah, true. But I'll also say that yeah, it's that first like encounter when they find your page and they're mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. and they'll DM you and be like, hey, do you want to grab coffee? Or like, I read this play of yours and I'm really kind of like
yes.
I'm also a playwright myself and like, or like or I'm a director of this theater. Like I would love to connect with you somehow. You know, like,
yeah. So it's really good, I think, for finding people and connecting with them.
Yeah. Cause it's like that approach versus, yeah, you go to the bars, you're like trying to meet and talk to people and you're like, who's who? And you're like, mm-hmm. so much like dating.
I mean,
like,
it's true. I also hate that. So. And I mean, I will say like there are ideas I've learned about, there are books I've learned, you know, I've gone out and like bought books of poetry because I've read mm-hmm. somebody's poem on Instagram. And I just feel like I have to specify that I'm not talking about like the Instagram poet. What's her name? Rupi Kaur. That's not who I mean. But like,
yeah.
You know, like, I just think there are things I've learned about through social media, and there's people I've connected with that, like, I wouldn't in a million years have connected mm-hmm. with if not for social media. So I do think it is good for that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's, like, is it bad to have, like, a specific, like, scheduling time? Like, okay. Like, you know how I said, like, late nights is usually my Twitter time and then early morning.
Sarah, when I first met you, you told yeah. me you put a big piece of paper above your desk and you were like, Facebook from this time to this time. This is not a new idea. You, like, scheduled.
Obviously. But you know what? I feel like, okay, yeah, trying to do that, restrict yourself like that, obviously didn't work for me.
But I do think it's a good idea. It's just really hard.
I think it's – I mean, it's weirdly like the Twitter thing. It's not something I like tell myself to do. It's just like instinctively like, oh, late night, right before bed.
Yeah.
10 minutes. Or like not even in time right before my bed, like right before I go to bed. But it's like I'm like kind of like brushing my teeth, walking around. I'm like I have to start thinking about ideas. I'm like – and I tweet it, you know, and I go to bed. And I feel like it just became a habit of that
mm-hmm.
over time. Like, it's not like I force myself, like, every night before I go to bed, I'm going to tweet something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that naturally happened organically. So I'm kind of like, is there a way to organically program yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just remember feeling like in grad school, I was really feeling this. Like I would have a funny idea or I would observe something, I would observe a conversation, and I would take that idea to Facebook. Like that was the place, kind of like what you're talking about with Twitter. Like you try out a joke on Twitter. I would like try out a story idea or a mini scene on Facebook. And then I remember thinking like, what if all this writing energy that I'm putting into Facebook, I instead just put into my notebook, you know, or like turned it into my next play. Yeah. And it's delayed gratification. So it feels a little like I would get impatient and just want that immediate reaction from social media. But if I could make myself direct that energy into the play, then ultimately the feedback would be more satisfying because it would be, you know, more of a thing that I was putting out into the world. And so I started to feel like Facebook was bleeding me dry of my creative energy.
Yeah.
And that I wanted to save it. I wanted to save that creative energy for something bigger that was like actually mine and not a bit of data for an evil corporation. Are we still? Yeah. I think I've moved on to problems.
I mean, we've been going back and forth. It's like, salute, like what we love about it, and immediately back to problems. Yeah. I mean, oh my God, we get it. We like, social media is bad. We know. Wasn't there Facebook recently having this announcement that they want to create an Instagram for kids? And immediately.
Yes.
All the like general attorneys are like, no effing way. Like 34, I don't know how many.
And these are people, I mean, the people who run these networks and make these platforms and design them, they do not let their own children use them.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to like damage everybody else's kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make money.
Yeah. So when I read that, though, when I read that article, I was like, oh, okay. Like, as society, we know social media overall is pretty unhealthy place. Like the fact that just a reaction of like our like government level or something, like they reacted immediately to that, like hell to the no. So we know it. We know that. And yet it's still like a fabric of society.
Like, do you think that like in 20 years people are no longer going to be having this conversation because it's just going to be so integrated into our lives? Like, I mean, I do think, you know, in the 20th century there were all these debates about like, is TV terrible for you? And like nobody really talks about that anymore because for better or for worse we moved on from that conversation. Americans watch many, many hours of TV every day, but we don't really talk about like, is TV bad for kids? Because now there's something so much worse, you know, or something. Yeah. Like I just feel like all these kids are growing up with social media, and in 20 years, we're just gonna have accepted it.
I always feel like there's gonna be a reaction, like the next generation, like. My cousins don't post. Like if they do post, it's like they delete it because they see the generation before them being like, they post a lot, their food all the time. I do the opposite of what older people are doing.
Yeah,
so they are hardly on. So I am curious of like the Gen Z or maybe even the one after Gen Z.
Yeah,
is like what their reaction to like seeing like. Wow, my millennial parents are like anxiety. What the
right,
hell?
Right.
And so I always think that I honestly, yeah, in 20 years, I don't, if there's going to be something worse than like social media.
Probably. It's not going to be virtual reality.
virtual reality? Or like, does it I don't think it'll completely disappear, but like, what is this? Or will like social media be in a way that's changed in a different way? But, you know, I predict this. Facebook is like on its way out. It's a beginning. I feel like it is a beginning of like going
on. But the company, I think the platform Facebook is on its way out, but the company, I mean, they are buying everything else. And so they're still going to be the evil man behind the curtain, probably.
Yeah. Unless somebody creates something else, like reacting.
Remember Ello? Were you ever on Ello?
Okay. I saw you write that. I'm like, I vaguely remember, but I have no idea what Ello is.
Like, it was like, it existed for maybe 6 months. I mean, it still exists. I have an account, but I mean, I don't know if anybody uses it. But it was like, there was some, it was after some backlash against Facebook maybe or Instagram. Mm. And everybody was like, oh, I'm moving over to Ello.
Yeah. Oh, I vaguely remember this. There's so many social media that came out like, I'm moving away from Facebook to do this. Mm-hmm. And then joining another social media. This is also reminding me of this, and I've been saying this all the time, but like, I hate, like, as society, we are also in our own little bubble.
Yeah. Right?
Like, we're creating our own little safety bubbles with like-minded people.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is no sense of communication with people. No, there's nothing on the same page. We're all in our own little realities. And same way with like, I honestly think about entertainment this way a lot, where people who watch Netflix, versus people who watch HBO versus people who watch Hulu are all probably going to be different people, like all different
that's
people.
That's interesting.
Like, you know,
like Apple. Don't watch any of them.
And but then it's like, there's like no sense of like a common understanding of what's good. I don't know if that makes sense. Mm. Like, we are all being in our own little bubble of our own interest with like-minded people that I feel like in that we're separating ourselves like from understanding like I mean, I do this, I find myself doing this a lot. Like, I'm a HBO girl and I poo-poo Netflix. Like, I go, you Netflix people are trash. Like, you know, I find myself doing that. Like, that's not premium the way HBO is. Like, you know, like you see what I'm talking about? There's like,
yeah, I do. And I'm getting this like dystopian vision of hundreds of years in the future when there will no longer be nation states, but there will just be like political entities controlled by corporations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, but you told me to watch that.
Oh my God. I mean, it's really, it's like a bad comedy. It's very satirical. It's Mike Judge. Like, it was made in like 2000, but he was like predicting the future, which is like happening right now. What's what he predicted? It's like, it's insane. But yeah, I just like, I think about this constantly to a point that maybe it's unhealthy, but I do think about as a writer, as an artist, like, you know, people say writing specific and it's a universal, but what's universal for a group of people will not be universal for everybody.
Want to see you write a play that has three parts and it's the same story, but the first one is like HBO style and the second one is Netflix style and the third one is like Hulu style. I'm hilarious. So curious about what that would look like.
That's so funny. That'd be a fun experiment for sure.
Okay. Well, I do want to say like one more thing I think that is helpful about social media is it can be great for crowdsourcing ideas or syllabus reading lists. One thing I miss about Facebook is being able to just put out a question and having so many people from different chapters of my life answer that question. because I would get a really good, because I've lived in so many places and, you know, been part of so many different institutions, it would be really a good way to get a kind of a cross section of what people thought about something. And that was really fun. And you can't really do that with Instagram.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when I'm writing a syllabus and say, like, what are your favorite plays about ghosts? And just get lots of different answers from different people.
Yeah. Well, is it because you feel like the same people on Facebook are not really on Instagram?
Well, Instagram is just not really set up to do that. I mean, it's not the same kind of engagement.
Yeah.
The algorithm works differently. The comments are, you know, like in Facebook, when you would do a post, all the comments would be much more easier to read through and people could talk to each other.
Yeah.
Whereas Instagram, it just works differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crowdsourcing is actually a really cool thing about social media. Like, we do that on our show on Becca's Favorites.
Yeah.
We're like, well, I'll post a question. And then we love like the comments and the answers we get from the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? I don't know. Like, I just remember a time when we're all using those encyclopedia books. there was like always a new edition, like two, 3 years or something. And you're like, I have to read this all over again. No, I'm just kidding. But just information sharing and gathering information has become way, like, way easier than borrowing, going to your library and getting encyclopedia books and finding information that way. But I think that's the thing about the internet, social media, the accessibility. Like, if you can get your hands on the internet, then it's like everyone is on it, like, an equal footing. Like, everyone has access to this.
Right.
And that's cool. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well,
an hour of this.
We solved it, you guys. This is our answer about social media and writers.
Yeah.
We want to know what you think.
Our vents are venting for like an hour.
I don't know if we really addressed the question Terry asked us, but.
I feel like we circled around it. Like, we circled around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is ongoing. Well, like, obviously, who knows, right? In 5 years? Maybe even a year, social media have changed, and we'll revisit this topic.
Watch, I'm going to be on all the platforms. I'll be a whole new person.
I think being just one or two is fine. One is fine.
All right, LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. Don't let my dad find you.
I had no idea that, like, LinkedIn is so – there are people who are really active on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn
constantly
is hilarious.
Posting about their career successes.
LinkedIn is hilarious to me. It's the one place where I literally laugh my head off in the biggest way. I go on there and I honestly go to my feed just to laugh at like HR people.
Yeah.
Complaining.
Or just I'm like, wow, it's just a whole different universe that I wasn't even aware of.
It's like entrepreneurs and it's like business people and
Think pieces.
Like, yeah, think pieces.
The workplace. Yeah.
And yeah, and I mean they're so like earnest.
Yes. LinkedIn is so earnest.
And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm sorry, but I laugh because it's I know people are like trying to be inspiring, but like, I'm not inspired by this because we have bigger problems because like these tech companies are ruining us. But yeah, it's a funny place. If you go, I'm sorry for people who really love LinkedIn and like go there with earnesty.
Well, people are on their best behaviors there because it's, you know, they're all trying to get a job.
Yeah.
Professional.
Yeah. And then they go on Twitter and they're like shitting on their toilets. And okay. All righty. Let's move on to questions.
I'm going to let you go second because you have a big glisten. So just to close out the show. So my glisten is I watched Wolfwalkers, which is a movie from this animation studio that I really like called, I think it's called Cartoon Saloon or Saloon Cartoon, out of Ireland. And this is about like, I don't know, like maybe 16th century Ireland, this town at the edge of the woods, and the wolves occasionally come and eat a sheep or two. And there are these creatures that can change from person to wolf. Anyway, it's like everything I love in a story. But the best thing about the movie is the animation is so gorgeous. This company also, or studio also made the film The Secret of Kells, which I also love. And their style is just so different from the animation I'm used to seeing. It's like really lush and unpredictable and lots of kind of spirals and transformations. And it's just gorgeous.
That movie screams Sam Collier. Like,
I know.
I watched the movie and I was like, Sam, like, this is Sam Collier movie. Like, it just screams your name. Also, that movie, the soundtrack is so fun. Like, I'm running with the wolves tonight. You know, like, I was playing that song on repeat so for days to a point where Nick was like, please shut up. Stop it.
Okay, well, just because he can't appreciate like the magical transformation of a person to a wolf.
He fell asleep during that movie.
What?
He fell asleep. Can you believe that?
Well, I guess he's not the target audience.
I freaking, that movie, Wolfwalkers, is so fun. And the art direction is beautiful. And love it.
And there's just something really satisfying about hand-drawn animation that's not, like, all digital.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when Pixar was cool, and then Disney bought Pixar, like, took over, and then now and every mainstream animation is like this Pixar digital type artwork, which is fine. Like, stories is great, but, like, man, I got a whole other level, like, eye stimulation when I watched
Wolfwalkers. Exactly. And it was, you forget that there are other possibilities when you only ever see one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it did take a moment to, like, adjust. My eyes were like, wow, there's so much color and artistry. Like, my eyes were just trying to adjust the, like, the pace, like, the speed, too. Like, because I think hand-drawn or, like, animation is filmed at, like, a different speed. It's a little slower versus, like, computer digitized. So I found myself, my eyes were like, whoa, okay. It's like, slow down.
That's true. It's not as smooth and polished. It's, like, kind of rough around the edges and jumpy is not the right word because it's not the least bit jumpy. But it's, like, it just feels a little more jagged somehow.
Yeah. I think the frame is just one frame slower than the speed, the frame rate. But yeah.
And it feels so much more expressive because of that.
Yeah. All right. I hope they're listening to the show and, like, hire you, Sam, and bring you to the Ireland. They need you.
All right. I'm going to learn how to draw. And then I'm going to go be an Irish animator.
Sam Collier, do you mind writing the best piece out there for us?
I don't know. Irish accent. Amazing.
I'm trying. Okay. All right. My glisten.
What's your glisten, Sarah?
I'm getting married.
What?
Yes. I know the listeners have been saying about this. It feels like at this point, like, I've been making it all up that I've been engaged and, like, Nick is not a real person. I'm getting married finally. Knock on wood that there's nothing bad happens. But set to happen end of June, and I'm thinking about it. I'm excited. I get to see friends, family after crazy. I've been engaged and planning this wedding since November 2018.
That's amazing, Sarah. That's so long.
What the F? Like, what the F? Like, I was like all for long engagement, but not this long to the pandemic. So yeah, it's like, it's been like two and a half years, almost 3 years of this perpetual hell of wedding planning. Like, it's like, oh, and constantly changing plans, but I'm excited. This is going to happen. Looking forward to it. Sam is officiating.
That's right.
She's officiating. So, it's going to be awesome. So this leads us to an announcement. We are taking a short break, a little mid-season break. So I'm not a bridezilla. It's all the attention.
People understand.
We're just taking a little mid-season break. We've never done this, but we're just taking a little mid-season break to focus on, give us some time to refocus and come back with fresh energy, I guess. And so for the month of June, we'll be doing some playback episodes of some of our favorite interviews we've done in the past. So if you're like brand new and you never were able to go back and listen to all our episodes in the beginning, we're going to like highlight some of those.
Yeah. And we think you'll really like these. We picked a couple that are some of our favorites.
Yeah. From like even our from our first season. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's it. That's our little announcement. That's our glistens. That's our show. We'll see you. Or I don't know. We'll not see you. We're not seeing each other.
Talk to you
back in July. All right.
Take care, everybody.
Take mini breaks from social media.
's for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.beckettsbabies.com. That's www.beckettsbabies.com, and you can contact us there. Thanks for listening.